This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. This week's series of shootings near Atlanta that took the lives of six Asian women, well, it's driven home a sense of fear in Asian communities all across the country, including right here at home. Though the motives of the shooter are still coming out, he doesn't have to make a statement of hate for people to feel targeted.
It just, you know, whether it's scared for my own family, it's also scared for my own Asian community. I grew up in a very Asian community, and I'm scared for their children, too. You know, why are they growing up in this world that's full of hatred?
That's Van Nguyen from Monterey Park. She spoke to KCRW's Danielle Chiraguayo, who spoke to several Asian-identifying Angelenos about racism that they've encountered during the pandemic and even way before. And Danielle joins us right now to talk about it. Hey there.
Hey, Steve.
In L.A. County, 15% of residents identify as Asian. And, of course, that includes a huge, diverse cross-section of Chinese, Korean, Filipino, Vietnamese, not to mention South Asian communities, Indian Americans as well. And I think we like to think of ourselves as a big melting pot, Danielle, in that cliche. But you heard from people who had really experienced hostile racism right here.
Yeah, Steve, I really did. Van Nguyen, who we heard from a little while ago, says that for as long as she can remember, she's been called names and has been made to feel like she's less than due to her Vietnamese heritage.
I've been called like, what are you? Or, you know, go back home. Or, you chink. And I'm just walking down the street. It's so often that it kind of desensitizes me. You know, ever since I was younger, I hated being Asian. I hated being Vietnamese, like, because people called me fresh off the boat. You know, you speak English, you know, we're in America. And I'm like, I am confused because I was born on a boat coming to America. So I was learning Vietnamese and English at the same time. But, you know, my native language is Vietnamese. And we were just the typical immigrant. My dad escaped from Vietnam with the family and my mom had me on the boat. And then we came to LAX.
I mean, the language, Danielle, is shocking, but obviously not surprising. She was dealing with racism against her way before even the pandemic started. I mean, this is years ago, right? As a child.
Yeah, unfortunately. And Van says it just got way worse after. When we talked, she even referenced former President Trump's disparaging description of the coronavirus.
You know, Mr. Trump saying Kung Flu and, you know, China virus and all that. And it's just it opened the doors wider, and it just made me kind of afraid, like, okay, well, now it's there. It's just like a passport for you to just say whatever you want to say. But there's racism everywhere. It's just, now it's just kind of the floodgates are open.
So Van says the shooting in Atlanta took her experiences from bad to scary. These recent attacks on Asian folks and women specifically, Van was telling me that she's just scared to step outside.
I just want to run errands and go home. I'm a small Asian woman. I'm super petite, 5'2". Who knows what would happen?
And with these shootings in Atlanta, Van is also now afraid for the lives of her parents.
You know, the straw that broke the camel's back is that my mom, I mean, it's typical Vietnamese family where, you know, my mom owned nail salons. And I can't imagine, and she doesn't anymore, but I can't imagine somebody going in, and it just gives me nightmares, like somebody going into her nail salon and shooting it up. You know, I just, and when I heard about the massage parlors, and I'm like, oh no, you know, and even if it's not officially racially motivated, it just, it made me, it hit home to me more so.
She talks, Danielle, about fearing for her parents. Is that something that you're hearing from other people as well, being worried about their elderly family members?
Yeah, so Steve, I heard it from every single person that I talked to. One of those folks is Michelle Gonzalez. She identifies as Filipina and as Mexican-American, and her parents live over near Carson. Michelle told me that she and her brother are so scared for their parents right now that they've essentially told their mom, stop going on walks, you know, in her own neighborhood.
You know, with COVID, you know, a lot of older retired parents are getting cabin fever and they really want to go outside on their daily walks. And it was mostly my brother who was really strict and firm about my mom not going out. And you know, that was just our way of protecting her from violence that could actually happen in our community when before we would never thought or never think that something like that would ever be possible in our community.
So, Steve, I also spoke with Yoshi Warita, who grew up over in Boyle Heights, and his dad actually still lives there. And his dad is Japanese. His mom is Puerto Rican. And back in January, he says his 73-year-old dad reached out and actually confided in him that he's been watching the news lately and
seeing what's going on throughout the country against Asians and, you know, specifically for some reason, elderly Asians. He started developing this fear and he's encountered discrimination before, but he's never felt afraid for his safety.
And so now, because his dad is afraid, Yoshi's telling me that he's either been running errands for his dad or actually just tagging along and just accompanying him wherever he needs to go.
Did anyone you talked to act surprised that this hostility is being directed at them?
I've gotten some mixed responses. Some folks have said that they felt there's been progress made over time, and now they're just dismayed that this is all happening right now. Yoshi actually told me a story about an early memory of his where he and his dad were very overtly harassed as they went to an LA County Target one day.
And I remember getting out of the car, walking towards the entrance of Target, and two men, they did like a gesture with their hands to kind of like slant their eyes, and they were calling us chinos, and chinos in Spanish it means Chinese, and so you know they assume someone who looks Asian they're going to be Chinese, and they were kind of like taunting us, saying like ching chong chong, things like that. And I was a little kid, so I didn't know how to react. I don't know how to process that. And my father, you know, at that time, he was much tougher. I would expect him to react and say something, but he didn't. And as an adult looking back, I felt like that really hurt him.
So this incident with Yoshi may have happened years ago, but it's these recent incidents, like those shootings in Atlanta, that are rekindling fears of something happening close to home. For Michelle Gonzalez over in Carson, she told me she heard about an attack on a 52-year-old Asian woman in Queens, New York. She was violently shoved into a newsstand last month back in February. And according to the local NBC affiliate, the woman, she ended up needing stitches. And so it's these types of incidents that are really messing up Michelle's sense of safety.
Normally, we often think that we're safe in California, we're safe in Southern California, we're safe in Los Angeles, a very diverse communities, but to see it happen in Queens, to see it happen in Oakland, to see it happen in San Francisco, that really hit home it can actually happen.
And Steve, it's really just that. It's this sense of feeling like a walking target. And it's really resonating with a lot of Asian American Angelenos right here around the city and around the county.
All right. It is. It's painful to think about in this city, the city that we love and we all share, obviously one of the most diverse cities in the world. KCRW's Danielle Chiraguayo. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
And back now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Earlier this week, a long-awaited decision, a beautiful moment of reality television.
Rachel, will you accept this rose?
I found the love of my life. All the ups and downs, even yesterday.
Sorry.
It was worth it.
The Bachelor, Matt James, chooses his mate, Rachel. But then he had to backpedal after some reality developments. In fact, this entire season, the 25th, has forced the Bachelor franchise to finally confront race and the nuances of Happily Ever After. Ricardo Handy is a film editor. He owns Sunwise Media, and he's here with us now to talk about it. Ricardo, welcome back to you.
Hey, nice to be back. How are you?
I'm all right. We kind of knew what was coming before the ender this week. Some pretty recent pictures of Rachel emerged where she's at this antebellum party taking pictures, you know, something out of the Civil War era. So that was jarring. Then the Bachelor host Chris Harrison defended the picture, saying, you know, 2018 isn't really 2021, which, well, a lot of folks just hammered there. And he had to take some time away from the program as well. My goodness. Were you surprised by what happened on The Bachelor?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, it's really just at the forefront of our consciousness and conversations. And so folks are you know, these things are bubbling up to the surface.
In the After the Rose special on Monday that aired right after the finale, Matt confronted Rachel. They were on the sofa together and he put the kibosh on everything. Let's listen.
It's just disappointing. I had to take a step back for you to put in that work that you outlined that you needed to do. And that's something you got to do on your own. And that's why we can't be in a relationship.
Can't be in a relationship. But then Matt also talked about how he had to work to avoid falling into common tropes about being black, about being a black man. Do you think, Ricardo, that reality TV, particularly a show that's based on the cliche of romance, you know, here's a rose for you, could be less stereotypical?
You know, you hit on something very important about reality television versus scripted television. And I think that a lot of scripted television is either sometimes based on our preconceived notions or stories we've heard, right? Or our version of stories based on, you know, some sort of fantasy, you know. And in reality, love and real life is way more complicated and nuanced than that. And it's just sometimes hard. It's the harder path as storytellers in reality television to actually tell a story that has these multifaceted nuances that real life has, right? Like we tend to want to put everything in these very neat boxes, and just life is not like that. And so, I think that for him and for many black men that are either put on TV or put in these positions, you've seen yourself portrayed on TV or you've seen black people portrayed on TV specifically in different ways. And you want to make sure you don't come off inside of those tropes because, you know, real life doesn't really reflect what people have been seeing on TV for years.
Right. Yeah. The scripted television, what you know, those boxes, those neat little boxes that you were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that that's going to be a tough thing for anyone deciding to come on television at any point in a reality television situation, because at the end of the day, you know, there needs to be some drama. There needs to be a great story there. And not everyone's going to be as open with every facet of their lives and just let the producers mold whatever happens. Right. You want to have some semblance of a control of how you appear on television. And then there's that extra added layer of the pressure of like, oh, I'm here representing for a whole group of people, right? And so now you're concerned about how am I representing for black folks, right? And you know, and there's a lot of different groups that have that same pressure, right? When you, how am I representing for the LGBTQ community, or how am I representing for women or Asian people, right? Like, you know, these are the things that go through your mind when you are put in these positions in the American pop culture landscape, because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, like, you know, different stereotypes, right, about all these different groups that are considered other.
Well, I mean, I wonder how much the lens of L.A. and Hollywood has to do with this. You know, the fact that, I mean, it is very, I dare call it insular, you know, that there's just a lot of rehashing and people who have been around for a long, long time, not really, as you say, seeing what's out there in America.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the downside of nepotism, right? The upside is that you've maybe built a community of people that you know and trust, right? But if that community isn't diverse, if that community isn't really reaching the entire swath of people that are available, then you don't really know if you have the best people, right? And like, I use the example of the NBA. The NBA was always this place where, you know, we started off at this place where, you know, we weren't allowed, like Black folks weren't allowed to play, right? And you look at the NBA today, and it's very competitive to get in. And essentially, the best players get in because they've worked at it for their, you know, for their entire lives. And so I think that it's a good example of, you know, when you start to make things a little bit more equitable as far as opportunity, you start to see these areas in our lives, and not just the NBA. There's a lot of areas, a lot of jobs, like I think nursing is another good example, like where it's like, you know, you just get, you know, the best people and you give everyone equal opportunity to get in. And then the people that work the hardest at it get those opportunities. Versus the nepotism where you are, just bringing in your friends and family. And the difference in the product is way better, right? Like that's what makes those industries really profitable because people watch them because they know that these are the best people in the world at this thing.
Do you think that what happened in this season with you know, on The Bachelor, Matt James, and even with Chris Harrison, the host, I mean, do you think it's going to change the franchise? Maybe even make it better? Ooh, that was quite a sigh.
Well, you know, wow. It's like, you don't know, right? It's the unknown of like what, you know, you always never know how long people will fight against the world changing around them, right? Because, you know, we've all had those experiences where people just want things to be the same, yet the world around us is changing and there's a resistance, right? And so my only concern about all that, it's a very loaded question, right? Because like, how long will the people in power, the people that are conservative about change, you know, fight against the change that's coming and that's happening, right? And how long will they resist it? And that's the resistance, that friction is what we have to work through. But at the same time, you know, who knows how long it will take.
Ricardo Handy, editor, producer, production executive, has the Handy Foundation, owner of Sunwise Media. Ricardo, thanks for coming on again. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Before you leave us today, a few words about moving on. Trying to get past this pandemic and the crazy, heartbreaking, challenging year or more of ups, mostly downs, we asked you if you've gotten fully vaccinated against COVID, like 10% of your fellow Californians, and how you're perhaps living life differently than you have this past year. What's changed now that you have your shots? So I want you to hear from a couple of folks who got back to us. One, a grandmother in Orange County. The other, a daughter in Los Angeles.
My name is Suzanne Rohde Ross. I live in Seal Beach, California. The way that life has changed since I've had my second vaccination was just a huge sense of relief. Boy, once that second dose had taken effect, I just knew I could see my two kids, my son and my daughter, and I could see my grandchildren. I have four grandkids. Noah is 13, Dana is 8, Natalie is 5, and the baby's just 3 months. I could go over without my mask. We could snuggle, we could hug, we could talk and giggle.
Okay, you guys, so what did you miss the most about being close to me and Papa? Natalie, how about you?
Cooking with you.
Cooking with me, okay. How about you, Dana?
Same, cooking and watering your orchids. And also with Papa, his funny, dorky jokes.
Okay. Noah?
Probably, like, our intellectual conversations about, like, just random crap. And, like, yeah, cooking. I learned how to make a bunch of new stuff. I learned how to make deviled eggs.
Noah, he's just changing so fast. He's now taller than I am, a couple of pounds heavier than I am, and he's 13 years old, you know? He's hit puberty, his voice has dropped, and I could really take that all in, and I've been cut off from it. So you guys, what is it that you're really looking forward to doing once the pandemic is all gone and we can resume life like it used to be?
Going to the aquarium.
The aquarium. Okay, Dana, how about you?
Probably going to Disneyland and seeing people's faces again. And not being like being next to people. And just, it's like so different now than it was before.
Yeah.
But also to like not be online anymore.
And what's better about actually being in class?
You could see your friends and, like, you could learn more.
Why?
Well, because sometimes it's hard to see things or hear things online or, like, computer glitches and stuff. Yeah, I was pretty lonely, too.
It just made me feel sad that I couldn't really be a part of their day-to-day life, because I have been very much so since the beginning. I'm very grateful to Zoom. I'm very grateful for FaceTime, but it's just not a replacement for the face-to-face contact that we can have now.
Hello, this is Siobhan. I live in Los Angeles, and I am a mom of two girls, college age and high school age, and I'm also a nurse. And my mother, who lives nearby in Redondo, she is now officially 2 weeks past her second dose of the vaccines. So we are hanging out. I'm so excited. I'm walking up to my mother at the mall with her cute purple hair. Hi, we get to hug. Oh, yay. Yay. Oh, so good to see you.
Last time. Sure
have. I've seen my mother through the pandemic. I mean, not that many times, to be honest, but we've hung out outdoors with masks, distanced. We did hug once over the summer because we were like, numbers were, you know, COVID numbers were decent. So we're like, okay, I guess we could hug. But that was like June or July. So I'm super excited to hug her today, and also super excited to just hang out in her house and like eat food and knit and make cups of tea. And I'm just so excited, and it's just going to be a whole new way of being grateful for spending time with my loved ones.
Hello. Vaccinated lady coming in your house.
Yep.
I mean, we actually get to take our masks off.
Oh, yeah, yours is already off.
Woohoo! See your face in person. Your house looks cute, Ma.
Huh?
Your house looks cute.
Oh, yeah, well, it's all the things
that... I had such a lovely visit with Mom. We just hung out in her house for hours. It just was so nice to not be outdoors and kind of be stressed about safety and people being around us. And it just was so lovely. And she loves to just work on project after project. and one of her projects, well, two of her projects over the pandemic, one was going through all of her old 45s from the 50s and 60s, some 70s. And then she also, we found a bunch of old boxes of slides, like 35 millimeter slides. And she went through them all, and she just was flabbergasted. It was all from, like, when she was a teenager, and then she had me when she was 18. So it's all late 60s, early 70s, and she got them digitized. And so we sat there and looked at family slides. It just was so lovely. It was just such a perfect reunion.
Many physical reunions coming soon, and we're going to have those for you coming up on Greater LA. That was Siobhan Stofka from LA and Suzanne Rohde Ross from Seal Beach in Orange County. Want to share your own story about how life is different now that you or someone you love is vaccinated? Head on over to KCRW.com and click on the post called Let KCRW Know. And while you're online, subscribe to the podcast, won't you? Don't ever miss another GLA story by having it delivered to you on the regular KCRW.com/GreaterLA. That's all the time today. Next week, can a small new project in South LA spell the beginning of an easier and cheaper way to shelter the unhoused? And the new weed economy in the desert, it's becoming a high heat. Jenna Cagle, Captain Barnes, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, PJ Shahamat, Paul Smith, Lorenzo Ponce de Leon, Amy Ta, Phil Richards, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordall all had hands on the show this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great night.